Call River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Call River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here on the in the Eastern Time Zone, and before we know it, it will be 9. These shows have a way of flying past us, and I think it's because of the nature of what we do here. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, a little something we like to call conversation radio. It's really not like anything else going out there, I don't think. Much more neighborly, much more relaxed, much more, you know, chatting over the back fence or on the front porch, but it ain't Friday yet. No. This is unique. I don't think you're going to find this in many other places, and God knows you won't find it in the world of the authoritarian right wing where people have to be told what to think. This is progressive conversation, liberal conversation, and it's available only on the Internet and perhaps a few little... Oh, I don't know, yar, pirate radio stations out there that aren't afraid of, $475,000 per repetition of the word booger fines that can be levied. If you're willing to be a pirate radio station in the first place, well, yeah, I mean, just say. No, The Horn is available on the Internet. It's available in a wide variety of places. It's available, of course, first and foremost at headonradionetwork.com. A website that you will notice is not just absolutely choked with a whole bunch of banner advertising and stuff like that. We try to resist the commercial impulse here because we want to keep what we're doing here in focus. It is about the content. It is about the conversation. It is about, in short, you. And so we're not trying to deliver you product. Most commercial broadcasting, look, if it, we all know, the movie Idiocracy, the number one movie in the land in Idiocracy is a movie called Ass, and that's all it is 2 hours of a guy's butt. Well, believe you me, in 2012, if commercial broadcasters thought that there were a few million people who would tune in for that, they would put it on TV, and they would hang advertisements all around it. Right? Yeah. But we don't do that here at The Horn. Instead, we rely on your determination to see that we are able to continue doing what it is that we do, and we do the best at trying to do what we do. And you have all responded wonderfully to the very real news that we are in a financial hard place, and I'm proud to see that. We've actually gone past the halfway mark for September's fundraising before we got to the halfway mark of September. I don't remember when that's happened before, but we are, all of us who make this little effort happen, extremely grateful to you for making it happen for other people, because that's the other thing about the model here at The Horn. It's predicated on the fact that there are some people out there who can't contribute. And you make The Horn possible by your contribution. You make The Horn possible for those people. And it is immensely appreciated. I can tell you that. But no, The Horn is available on a wide variety of platforms. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. The stream link is also available at WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can find us on TuneIn Radio and Tuner Internet Radio and Stitcher Radio. We try to make this as available as possible, to the point of almost ubiquity. Because this, what you're listening to, is the future. There will, I suppose, always be terrestrial airwaves, but the right wing has completed an almost chokehold on them to the point that there's just... God, have you tried to listen to the music on the radio lately? Yuck. And, of course, the politics is all right wing. So there's just not much on the terrestrial radio anymore. And the few places that do carry progressive content struggle to survive. And that's a fact. So thank you for joining us, either live or by podcast or on the rerun stream. It is all appreciated. You guys are in rare form. Ray, right out of the gate. Yeah, but you could throw in some ass, Bob. And then Michael, ass. Isn't that the most popular or at least most distributed AM radio show for the past two decades? Idiocracy done been here. See ya. Going to Starbucks. Well, at least you're not going to H&R Block, Michael. I mean, I just don't think we have time. I mean, we all like it, but no. So get the horn however you wish and chime in any time. I love to read your thoughts. I love to share your email with the rest of the Horn family, and I hope that you will feel a greater participatory urge. We are very welcoming here to first-time callers or infrequent callers. We will make our every effort to make you comfortable, and no one's ever had to call 911 because a first-time caller passed out or anything. If you can't do a radio conversation on the horn, well, you know. But you can. And so I encourage your participation. It is Tuesday, and here in the last couple of months, we have come up with a name for Tuesday. This is, of course, Titanic Tuesday, so named because of the story that our buddy Jim told one evening about the 32,622nd tier right-wing blabber over in Beckley who referred to the Titanic plates that move around on the Earth. Yeah, you know, the Titanic plates like you get at Franklin Mint. Sharp bunch, those Rippig Lickens. You know, sharp like in, oh, I don't know, sharp like in a bowling ball is sharp. It is. It's Titanic Tuesday. We focus on some of the more brilliant aspects of the right wing. And we've got them tonight. Lord, yes, we do. We've got some... There's a little bit of legalism. You know, to be right wing is to be bigoted. It just... one kind of goes with the other, I guess. And we've got an example that just won't quit. You'll see what I mean. It's out of Pennsylvania. And it's really fun when people who understand what it is that they're looking at actually go and do some legal reading. So most of the time it's awfully dull and terribly dry. But sometimes it yields up a real gem once. The stuff that just sparkles, you find a diamond in the dung. And such, as it turns out, is the case in Pennsylvania, you know, with Pittsburgh in the west and Philadelphia in the east and Alabama in the middle. Thank you, Rick Smith. Have you ever checked out Rick Smith? He's my colleague and my buddy here on the horn. He follows at 9 p.m., and even if you can't listen to him live, I highly encourage you to download his podcast and check him out. He deserves to be recognized as probably one of the best progressive talkers in the entire United States, bar none. But, it was Rick who told me about Pennsylvania being Pittsburgh in the west and Philadelphia in the east and Alabama in the middle, and I think he's right. He was afraid he'd actually hurt my feelings saying that. No, Rick. It turns out that a woman by the name of Nicole Flatow did some researching on the Pennsylvania voter ID law decision. And what a Lulu it was. Nicole Flatow is over at Think Progress at, Think Progress Justice. And the voter ID law there, if we understand, of course, that the reason we're talking about the voter ID laws is because the Republicans absolutely have got to have these things in order to suppress the vote and keep progressives and liberals away from the polls. Because that's the only way that Bishop Willard Romney has a chance. The Pennsylvania voter ID law was upheld in trial court. It is now on its way to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. And in the trial court's ruling, they cited an innocuous-looking 18, because they all look innocuous when you just see them, and they're underlined with the 392 PA 421, blah, 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 citation there. It looks all terribly legal and nerdy and legally wonky and right. But then you go and read it, and you go, woohoo, oh, we have a winner, and that's apparently what happened with Nicole Flatow. Nicole Flatow ran across an article by Professor Jesse Allen analyzing the 1869 Patterson versus Barlow case that was cited by the trial court as a reason to uphold Pennsylvania's voter suppression voter ID law. And it is. It's a Lulu. Ms. Flatow cites Professor Jesse Allen as saying that Patterson versus Barlow serves as a blatant example of the anti-democratic voter suppression alleged by plaintiffs in the current voter ID case. In other words, by reaching back to 1869, and anytime you see 1869 in a voter case, you got to think, that's not a really, really progressive period in American history. Maybe there's some ugly crap in there. Crap, by the way, comes to us from below Dutch, not Anglo-Saxon. Just saying. I've been learning all kinds of stuff lately. The opinion in Patterson versus Barlow created a more difficult voting procedure for people in Philadelphia than for people in rural Pennsylvania counties. Why? Because Philadelphia had a great big working class and a burgeoning immigrant population. So the court, in setting up a different voting scheme for Philadelphia than for the rest of Pennsylvania, did so with the following reasoning, citing the following facts as reasoning behind setting up a, separate but equal, where have we heard that before, voting system in Pennsylvania. The problem with Philadelphia, the 1869 court in Patterson versus Barlow found, the problem with Philadelphia is that in Philadelphia there were, and I quote, rogues and strumpets. Yeah. Moreover, it was a matter of reverse reasoning, however, because they were talking about the good and decent people of the farming countryside of Pennsylvania. You know, the Alabama part. And they said that out there in the hinterlands, rogues and strumpets do not nightly traverse the deserted highways of the farmer. Low inns, restaurants, sailors' boarding houses, and houses of ill fame do not abound in rural precincts, ready to pour out on election day their pestilent hordes. You kind of got to read it like that. I mean, because what happened to me when I was reading the story the first time, doing show prep earlier today, I read that, and that voice was inside my head. I kid you not. It was Bugs Bunny wrapped up in the ermine cloak. Arise, sirloin of beef. Arise, Satchmo of Armstrong. Well, you can just hear those elitist 1% pricks in Harrisburg, can't you? We cannot have these rogues and strumpets voting as they nightly traverse the deserted highways of the farmer. Low inns? Because I guess these guys all stayed at the high inns, right? Restaurants, sailors' boarding houses, and houses of ill fame.
You read the, and you know, this was written in total seriousness as a reason to keep people, to make it harder to vote in Philadelphia in 1869. I'm surprised it doesn't say, not to mention recently freed Negroes. Ron in Raleigh gets it. He's down with the vibe. He says, what? Were there blackguards and poltroons as well?
No. There were blackguards and poltroons. Avast!
Jim noting, who you calling a strumpet? I've been called that and thought it was a compliment.
I thought it was something that you played Purcell's Voluntary on. Oh, no, that's a trumpet.
My goodness gracious.
Poltroons.
Because, see, the 1% thinks, acts, and talks like that. It would be much simpler if they would go ahead and just, you know, keep the strumpets and blackguards in the... Right? But that wasn't all in this case of Patterson versus Barlow.
As the rogues and strumpets are ready to pour out on election day their pestilent hordes.
It got worse. The case went on to observe that not having more difficult voting procedures for Philadelphia, quote, would be to place the vicious vagrant, the wandering Arabs, the Tatar hordes of our large cities on a level with the virtuous and good man.
And where you see virtuous and good man, you may by extension note it,
just sort of shoehorn. See, we've still got the shoehorns from last night. Just shoehorn the word white in there, okay?
Place the vicious vagrant, the wandering Arabs, the Tatar hordes of our large cities on a level with the virtuous and good white man.
That's 1869. No, really. That's 1869. But yet, it's also because it was favorably cited in upholding a voter suppression law in Pennsylvania. It's 2012. The rogues and strumpets have been, that language has been reaffirmed in the 21st century after America's been to the moon and stuff. Hoo-wee!
The vicious vagrant. Some law clerk or something in 1899.
Hey, Your Eminence, can I call them vicious vagrants?
Oh, do please. I shall be overjoyed to read that from the bench. Tatar hordes. Probably been reading Taras Bulba or some such. Wandering Arabs.
Really? Wandering Arabs?
Well, I guess we're just lucky you didn't say wandering Jews.
That's the rationale that will be cited to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania in fairly short order as a reason for keeping
American citizens from voting in the year 2012.
Tata hordes. No, I didn't say Tata, you people. Wandering Arabs.
Well, good God, if they're wandering, what are the odds they're going to find their way into a polling place? They're wandering!
Sailors' boarding houses. Oh, those sailors, thinking they can vote in America. And we do not want any pernicious sex workers voting either. Next thing you know, they'll be thinking they're citizens or some such. Or perhaps carried away by the Tatar hordes or the wandering Arabs.
Tell me about the wandering Arabs, Mitt. Oh, tell me. Tell me about the wandering... Yeah, there's going to be lots of wandering Arabs, Bob.
Really?
And rabbits? God. I want to know the lawyer that's going to...
May it please the court, we believe this case should we believe the decision of the court below should be upheld because its citation of Patterson versus Barlow is on rock solid ground, Your Honor. Wandering hordes. Because you know, Your Honor, it's 2012 and we still have wandering hordes of Tartar hordes and wandering Arabs and, oh Lord, now we got Mexicans too. And of course in 1869 those other dark-skinned people couldn't vote, and now they think they should be allowed to, too. And, well, by God, they need a photo ID. I mean, this is America. If you want to be a wandering Arab, be a wandering Arab, but be a wandering Arab with a photo ID.
Jesus. Now, meanwhile, this is the interesting part. At the trial of this matter in the trial court level, the state of Pennsylvania, are they a commonwealth? Somebody help me. Can't keep my commonwealths together. I know Kentucky is, and Massachusetts is. Jeeves. Virginia's, no? Yeah, I don't know. Must have put that on a brain cell that I killed one night. But officials of Pennsylvania were compelled to admit during the trial that they could not point to not even one case of voter fraud in which a person tried to vote improperly in the entire state, nor were there any investigations underway. But still, the trial court was concerned about those Tartar hordes and wandering Arabs. Oh, my aching back. But you have to understand, these things don't exist in a vacuum. This is a mindset that exists not in a vacuum. Okay, maybe it does exist in a vacuum because it exists in that space that would be occupied by a mind if right-wingers had them. But it is a vacuum. And nature and I abhor that vacuum. Exhibit 1, Representative Steve King of Iowa. Oh, dear. Steve King is being challenged in November by a Democrat by the name of Christy Vilsack. He even participated in a radio debate with her, at which point she brought up, what a punk ass Steve King is. In the radio debate, Ms. Vilsack said, frankly, he, meaning Steve King, he's been a bully, and he's an embarrassment to the people of Iowa. Yes, he is, ma'am. Yes, he is. We've only been saying this for a few years now. What's the matter with you people? He's an embarrassment to the people of Iowa when he talks about immigrants as animals. If my mother were here, she would say to Congressman King, show some decency. That's the part, ma'am, where you say, if my mama was here, she'd slap some sense into him. Yeah, because she might. But as is always the case, Steve King never apologizes because, well, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, it's okay if you're a Republican. Steve King instead doubled down. Having been criticized in May for his comments in which he compared immigrants to this country to dogs, and I'm a dog guy, I love dogs, but I recognize that there's a big difference between human beings and dogs, and it's generally a pejorative thing to compare human beings to dogs. Steve King responded, "This American vigor that we have that comes from legal immigrants who came to this country with a dream, we get the cream of the crop of every donor civilization on the planet. And people that can take a compliment and turn it into an insult are not going to be constructive working across the aisle." But that's what that was. It was a compliment. And everyone who was there and heard that knows that. Yeah, right. Because he compared immigrants to dogs. He really did. The original quote was, "You get the pick of the litter, and you got yourself a pretty good bird dog." Well, we've got the pick of every donor civilization on the planet. Steve not know his history real good. Many of the people who came here were not the cream of the crop. The landed gentry and the well-heeled and the well-to-do and the socially secure and the comfortably well-off did not leave Europe. Did not leave China or Japan. The desperate did. You know, that's why that poem, that Emma Lazarus poem that's inscribed, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free." See, the 1% has always been 1%. They generally have not fallen into the huddled masses category. No, we did not get the cream of the crop. What we did instead is prove that that kind of the eugenic horse crap is exactly that. It's specious. It's bull. It's baloney. America has proven, at its best times, America has proven that hard work and dedication and determination will outdo one's blood and breeding 9 times out of 10. Right? But, you know, what do you want from a Republican? But it's 2012, and there's Steve King comparing people to dogs. And he'd be perfectly comfortable in an 1869 in which one worried about Tartar hordes and wandering Arabs. Right? It beggars belief. Back to the mailbox real quick. Ron and Raleigh writing in, "Hey, Bob, I keep saying, it's feeling a lot more like 1912 than 2012. Tartars in Philly? Must have come up for the cheesesteaks. On the whole, I'd rather be in Philadelphia. You know, my old granddaddy once said to me, before they swung the trap, 'Boy, you can't cheat an honest man. Never give a sucker an even break. And don't smarten up a chump.'" You know William Charles Duncan Fields was from Philadelphia, right? Yeah. Ron, with all due respect, I it feels more like 10-12 to me. Because 1912, we'd had Teddy Roosevelt and a little bit of... Yeah, a little bit of the avarice of the 1%, a tiny little bit, had at least been checked in 1912. The Kate out on the front range. "Oh, stop it! Too funny. Wandering whore and strumpets. That was my jazz band back in the day. We used chainsaws and pink Glocks when we raided those houses of ill repute because the landed gentry wouldn't let us vote. Looks like they didn't learn the first time." Marty, comparing people to dogs with Steve King looking in a mirror and hoping? Well, it would be a step up for Steve King. Because I think if you were to chart his genome, his nearest animal relative is probably, oh, I don't know, the skunk, the weasel. Michael noting, so when's James O'Keefe going to be charged with being a strumpet? No, I think he'd be a poltroon. Jim, I went to Philadelphia once and it was closed. Oh, God, is it going to be one of those kind of nights? Really? Is that where we're going? Okay, there we go. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for the history lesson there, or the geography lesson. Commonwealths versus states. Maybe we can get this fixed in my tiny mind once and for all. Officially, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Virginia, and Massachusetts are all commonwealths. Okay. I'll try to remember that. Thank you, Mark. And then this, and it kind of has to do with why we began the program the way we did. Dr. John writing in under the subject line, September 11th. I managed to avoid most of what I'm sure was a stream of utterly terrible look-back stories on the TV today. Understand me, that day marked my life. September 11th, 2001. And there was incredible suffering and loss. But we can't seem to move past the empty appeals for prayers and look at the real consequences of that day, the ones that changed us as a people for the worse. One exception to my 9/11 blackout. While waiting for coffee in my university student center, I saw, of all people, Pat Robertson on the TV. About four undergrads had apparently tuned to his network and were, dare I say, enraptured. It was the usual stuff, war on terror, radical Islam, turn to Jesus, etc. This was really the last place I expected to run across old Pat and his religious claptrap. Really a bit shocking. I thought about going up and personally inviting them to enroll in my evolution course next semester. But the feeling passed. Yes, you're going to have to... Wait till tenure attaches before you go proselytizing, Dr. John. And speaking of religious claptrap, John asks, you realize today's also the anniversary of the Mountain Meadows Massacre? Yes, John, as a matter of fact, I did. 1857, you know. It was a Friday. I looked it up. I'm that nerdy. September 11th, 1857 was a Friday. A wagon train of settlers crossing the American West was going through southern Utah on the way to California. They had started out in Arkansas, and along the way they had picked up some additional folks in Missouri. For about a week, they had been periodically harassed by white folk, Mormons, dressed up as Indians, because they wanted to blame the Indians, and, well, it'd be kind of a double whammy, because... you could maybe get the federal government to come in or give the Mormons the license to just kill off the Indians. And you'd take care of those troublesome... Because they had set up this sick, disgusting theocracy in Utah. You know, husbands with multiple wives and... And so this party... This wagon train was traversing through southern Utah. They were well provisioned for their day. And on the morning of September the 11th, 1857, they were set upon... Well, no, that's not fair. They had been set upon in previous days, but they were down to almost no ammunition. Their animals were starving and dying of thirst. And some kindly, and this is what makes the Mountain Meadows Massacre so utterly disgusting. Some Mormons came up and said, here, let us help you. Come on out, it'll be okay. And they separated the women and the children from the men. And on a word, the Mormons turned around and slaughtered almost everyone. Something like 17 children deemed not to be old enough to remember the perfidy of that day were then kidnapped and raised as little Mormons. Somewhere between 120 and 140 innocent human beings who had done no harm whatsoever to the Mormons were slaughtered in cold blood. With the rise of the, with the Civil War, a proper investigation was almost impossible to carry out. It was picked back up after the Civil War. Brigham Young had been preaching fire and brimstone in the weeks leading up to it. He had created the atmosphere of hate and hostility that led to the murders. It wasn't a massacre. It was a murder. It was a mass murder. Killing one person is hard. Killing 120 is a real chore. After it was all over, Brigham Young, for whom a very large university is named, declared that the settlers on their way to California had been killed not by bloodthirsty Mormons, but by God as a matter of God's retribution. And now, a member of that religion wants to be the president of the United States. Ew. Just saying. Be interesting to say, Bishop Romney, will you stand here in front of the American people and condemn Brigham Young for saying and say that he was not a prophet and that there was nothing holy about him insofar as he said that the people massacred in the Mountain Meadows massacre had it coming because God was angry at them? Can you condemn him? If not, go home, you freak. Because you know what? Willard Romney would not condemn Brigham Young. Because Brigham Young is still revered as a holy man, a prophet of that bunch of 19th century Scientologists. Yeah, it's the anniversary of the Mountain Meadows Massacre. It's the anniversary of a lot of stuff. Oh, let's see. Oh, well, let me answer your question, Jim. Retribution for what? For being mean to Mormons. Because, you see, it had been announced that the American military was coming out to set up an outpost on the Great Salt Lake. And Brigham Young, who was a paranoid, raving, homicidal maniac, had whipped up the Mormons out there. Oh, the Americans, the people are coming from... Because, see, they didn't consider themselves to be Americans. They were separatists. It really was a theocracy. And Brigham Young told them that the United States government was invading. Not kidding. But yeah, September 11th is a troublesome date. I went and looked up a few things. Let's try some on for size. I went all the way back to the beginning of the first millennium of the current era. It was on this day, in the year 9, that an event happened that, when news reached Rome a few days later, would have Caesar Augustus, formerly known as Octavian, pounding his fists and banging his head against the walls of his palace in Rome, screaming, "Ware, legionem rede! Varus, give me back my legions." Because on this day, in the Teutoburg Forest, to the east of the Rhine, a brutal governor-slash-general of the Roman legions, Varus, V-A-R-U-S, you don't pronounce the V as a V, you pronounce it as a W in Latin, got some 20,000 Roman soldiers massacred in the dark and terrifying confines of the Teutoburg Forest. It was a day that Rome did not soon forget. One might argue that they remembered the Teutoburg Forest longer than this country will remember September the 11th, 2001. Because that day marked the end of any real hopes that the Roman Empire had of crossing the Rhine and establishing some sort of dominance east of the Rhine, such as they had established in Gaul. It took a Caesar to take Gaul, and they were fresh out. They just had brutal thugs like Varus. By the end of the 19th century, Arminius, who led the uprising, would have his name recast as Hermann, and a statue would be raised to him in the Teutoburg Forest, at the, it's called the Hermannschlacht. And it would become a symbol of German nationalism. We went to visit it while I was there. And lo and behold, there were some drunk Nazis just hanging out with their little 88 t-shirts on. I think I told the story during the 3-hour filibuster upon my return. Really wished I had Nazi stomping boots on that day, but I figured I'd probably gotten into enough trouble as it was, getting mugged and everything. But the Latin language stopped in the Teutoburg Forest. Köln, Cologne, which started out in Latin as colonia, colony, would be about as good as it got in Germany. And that for probably not another 100 years or so. September 11th, 9 of the current era. Then there's September 11th, 1297. And a little bit of nowhere in Scotland. Just a bridge over a little nothing stream. Stirling Bridge. A bunch of drunken Scotsmen led by Mel Gibson, William Wallace, attacked a group of English auxiliaries and routed them because the English were otherwise engaged elsewhere. That worked out well for the Scots, not. Yeah, all kinds of crappy things happened on September 11th. September 11th, 1973, the overthrow of Salvador Allende in Chile. September 11th, 1773, Benjamin Franklin wrote something rather trenchant. He said there never was, on September 11th, speaking for the Tommy Thompson bunch. Of course, the problem is I don't know how you draw that line. He said she didn't have, you know, no heartland values. Lord. That's what they got. That's where they are. Objecting to, yeah, really, people enjoying the disco band in the sunshine. I don't know. I guess he's appealing to those Wisconsin people who think that they've got enough money to almost call themselves Republicans. Bruce, anybody? I don't know. Makes me a little nervous because I showed the video to Agnes and we were both there watching that band play and at Wonder and we were both tapping our toes. Oh! Yeah. Worrisome. Because now we know that we don't have any heartland values either. Because people with heartland values do not dance to Wonder Woman theme songs as played by men dressed up in really campy over-the-top wigs and dresses. We don't do that. Right? But then again, Tammy Baldwin is a member of the House of Representatives. She's a Democrat. She's running for Senate from the state of Wisconsin. God, I hope she wins. But being a Democrat, and being as how we missed prayer meeting Wednesday yesterday, well, Brother Pat is here to explain it all to us.
Back in the 1850s or 60s, there was a charge in one party. It was the party of rum, Romanism, and rebellion. And I don't know what you label the Democrats now, but it's the party of gays, godliness, and whatever else. But I mean, that's same-sex marriage is in the platform. They want to go along with that as a right. And I'm just astounded because they can't defend it. And you ask yourself, you're going to go before the American people, and that's going to be the face you're going to present to America.
Yeah, and them drag queen faces. Men in dresses with beards that didn't even have the common decency to shave up real good. Gays, godlessness, and whatever else. I'm 80. I'm 89 million years old, and I can't think of another word that begins to get gays. It begins with G, and gays and godlessness, and God knows what else. And they can't defend it. Poor old Pat. Somebody hit him in the neck with an Aricept dart, would you? What have I been saying? Stuff really works, I'm told. Did you know you cannot defend equal rights for all Americans? Did you know that that's indefensible? You know, he's referencing the 1850s. Well, in the 1850s, there were preachers who thought that abolition was indefensible, who thought that treating a substantial, sizable portion of the population of the United States was morally and legally indefensible. Let's rehear old Pat in that context.
I want to go along with that as a right, and I'm just astounded because they can't defend it. And you ask yourself, you're going to go before the American people, and that's going to be the face you're going to present to America. You have insulted the Catholic Church with your rules. You've insulted the right to work states. You have insulted certain union groups with your stand on the pipeline. And now you're going after God. I mean, it makes no sense, but That's what they want to do.
Yeah, you know, that. It's a heck of a list to get through in any given day, I got to tell you. You gotta wake up every morning, you know, you go, you get your shower, you brush your teeth, and you got the list right there by the mirror. Maybe you shave. If you're playing in a drag queen band that later that day, you probably don't. But I don't ever have to worry about that because I don't play in a band. I mean, I can barely play the damn radio. But you got your little boxes you got to check off. I mean, what all's in these boxes there, Pat? Again, buddy?
Insulted the right to work states.
Oh, we've insulted right to work states. Yeah, of course. Because right to work states, it's an insult to suggest that people ought to actually have the right to work for a living wage. That's insulting. Yeah, see, we done insulted the right to work states. Who else was it again there, Brother Pat?
You have insulted certain union groups with...
Right, because I guess the Teamsters want the, you know, they don't give a rat's ass about the rest of America, and they want to see that damned Keystone XL pipeline built. They want the jobs. They don't care what happens to the rest of us as long as they get the jobs. So, you know, I'm happy to insult them. I mean, I'm not. Okay, I'll do it again today. Check it off the box. Okay. Who else, Pat?
You were staying on the pipeline, and now you're going after God.
Now I'm going after God? Pat, you got to listen, buddy. We've been going after that bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky for a while now for all that smiting going on. Yeah, see, Marty, that's a good question. How did the DNC insult right to work for less states by holding the convention in one? Uh-oh. Thank God. Thank God for the Horn fact-checking department. Irish Dave, always at the ready. Did Patwa Robertson study at the Paul R. A.N.U.? The three R's, rum, Romanism, and rebellion, was used in 1928 versus Al Smith. Not the 1850s. Yeah, see, Pat was transposing. He was doing a little transference work there. Now, no need, Doc. No, it's okay. I got this one. He was thinking about back when the 1850s run up to the recent unpleasantness. Yeah. Ron and Raleigh. Right to work states and God in the same sentence? F right to work states! Thank you, Ron. I couldn't have said it better myself. Ron also noting, it appears the liberals progressives aren't offended by the nuance of analogies and metaphors like our more sensitive Republican friends. Going back to our buddy Roscoe there. And then as a P.S., Ron adds, it's odd how you can feel the profound loss of someone you've never met. I'm a believer. I do believe that energy can never be destroyed. I know our friend has returned from to the stars, from whence we all come. Well said, Ron. I got a little email from our buddy Dennis, with whom I mow grass down in Kentucky all summer long. Well, you know, when there's no drought on it, the grass will actually grow. When we mow grass, he pushes the mower and I talk in his ear. Dennis sent me a picture the other day. The subject line merely said, an early photograph of me. And it just charmed my heart. Because I clicked on it. I figured it was, I don't know, a picture of a little bitty Dennis in a wading pool or, you know, some such. No. It was a picture of the Big Bang. or a reasonable facsimile thereof. A lot of emails roll in here. Don't assume necessarily that just because I didn't sit down and write back that particular day that I'm not reading it. Because I am. Yeah, an early photograph of all of us. Humphrey Bogart said in The Maltese Falcon, it's the stuff that dreams are made of. And was it Miranda in The Twelfth Night who said, we are the things that dreams are made of? If I got that right? And it was Carl Sagan who said, we are all star stuff. Every last atom, every last molecule, every last everything. I've remarked, and you've remarked from time to time, on the finiteness of our lives. But they are not as finite as we think. For everything that makes us up was present, as the first book of Genesis puts it, in the first verse of the first book of Genesis, in the beginning. In the beginning. Or, there's this from one of my heroes, Kurt Vonnegut, a noted questioner, non-believer, driven to his unbelief by the believers, as are so many of us. The last rites of the Baconianist faith seems appropriate at this moment. God made mud. God got lonesome. So God said to some of the mud, sit up! See all I've made, said God, the hills, the sea, the skies, the stars. And I was some of the mud that got to sit up and look around. Lucky me. Lucky mud. I, mud, sat up and saw what a nice job God had done. Nice going, God. Nobody but you could have done it, God. I certainly couldn't have. I feel very unimportant compared to you. The only way I can feel the least bit important is to think of all the mud that didn't even get to sit up and look around. I got so much, and most mud got so little. Thank you for the honor. Now mud lies down again and goes to sleep. What memories for mud to have. What interesting other kinds of sitting up mud I met. I loved everything I saw. Good night. I will go to heaven now. I can hardly wait to find out for certain what my wampeter was and who was in my carass and all the good things our carass did for you. Amen. Amen and amen. Worlds without end. Amen. So the phone lines are open. That's enough filibobstering for now. You know the numbers, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. Thank you for the kind contributions in Maura's memory. I tallied up the degree to which she had supported the horn over the years. And she's one of the reasons that we're still here. As are you all. Thank you. Green News Report is coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. It's Thursday. That means we get the Green News Report. And then, as noted, your calls.
It's Thursday, September 6th.
No. I guess, what? That sounded like the right thing. Okay. We'll see what happens. Oh, yeah, I got to rebuild this computer. And I keep trying, keep putting it off. Now, how do I make this stop? We may have a moment of silence or two here. All right, this will only take a second. Because if I try to do this while the music's playing, well, it won't work so well. Someday, I will have a producer. Or not. Sorry about the technical glitch there. But anyway, we'll be back. This is the Horn.
I've been thinking lately about the people I meet, the car wash on the corner and the hole in the street, the way my ankles hurt with shoes on my feet, and I'm wondering if I'm gonna see tomorrow. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. I was in the army, but I never dug a trench. Used to bust my knuckles on a monkey wrench. I go to town and drink, give the girls a pinch, but I don't think they ever even notice me. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. Fish and whistle, we'll whistle and fish. Eat everything that they put on your dish. And when we get through, we'll make a big wish that we never have to do this again. 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 Oh, my very first job, I said thank you and please. They made me scrub a parking lot down on my knees. Then I got fired for being scared of bees, and they only give me 50 cents an hour. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in the heaven. Whistle and fish, eat everything that they put on your dish. And when we get through, we'll make a big wish that we never have to do this again. Again, again. Oh, Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. We'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. We'll whistle and go fishing in the heaven.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, September 6, 2012.
The boom in oil and gas production, combined with greater energy efficiency, has driven oil imports to a near 20-year low and natural gas production to an all-time high. And renewable energy production has doubled.
Bill Clinton makes the green case for Barack Obama. Plus, the DOJ excoriates BP for willful misconduct and gross negligence.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Charles, I have 10 seconds. The change from Bank of America Stadium to here in the arena.
It wasn't the weather. They knew what the weather was going to be months ago.
Oh, my God. Democrats can forecast the weather months in advance. Thank you, Charles Krauthammer. No wonder they didn't tell the Republicans they'd be hit by a hurricane on the first day of their convention. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, the Democrats' Nostradamus-like ability to predict the weather...
Months in advance
aside, this is only a six-minute show. So do we have a prayer of covering what Bill Clinton covered in his 40-minute Democratic National Convention speech, even just on the green elements of that speech?
No, we don't. You can check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com, for the full clean energy agenda from the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte. We'll have more on that in a moment. But first, gotta tell you about the U.S. Department of Justice. They released an unusually scathing legal brief in settlement talks with BP this week. They're excoriating BP for, quote, gross negligence and willful misconduct in the catastrophic BP oil disaster 2 years ago. That's the one that killed 11 men and dumped over 206 million gallons of crude oil into the Gulf of Mexico, the worst oil spill in U.S. history.
Oh, so no wonder the DOJ wants to settle with them.
Well, I think that's pretty standard as far as these punitive damages and trials are concerned. The trial begins in January, and a finding of gross negligence would more than quadruple the fines that BP would have to pay, from $5 billion all the way up to over $21 billion. So it's in BP's best interests to try to reach a settlement before trial.
Yeah, it's in their best interest, but is it in ours? Why don't they just go to trial and forget this settlement nonsense? That's just me.
Well, BP says it will clean up tar balls and oil that washed up on Gulf Coast beaches after Hurricane Isaac if it is shown to be from BP's Macondo well. But BP also wants the government to apply all the money they spent on cleanup to reduce the total of any punitive fines they might receive.
Right. Forget the settlement.
It's an astounding legal brief from the DOJ. You should read it on our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Renewable energy from solar and wind has more than doubled under the president's leadership.
Clean energy getting lots of love at the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina this week.
The largest solar, wind, and geothermal plants in the world are sprouting up across our public lands.
That was Interior Secretary Ken Salazar speaking at the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina on Tuesday. Now, from a climate and energy standpoint, the first 2 days of the convention have much praise for America's booming clean energy industry. That's a huge contrast with the Republicans, whose agenda cuts clean energy funding. Not very many mentions of the need to address climate change or reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Most of the DNC speeches have focused on jobs, jobs saved by Obama's rescue of the American auto industry, which Republicans wanted to kill off, and jobs created in America's homegrown clean energy industry. The Obama administration has doubled clean energy generation in the U.S., says former President Bill Clinton, who made the case.
The agreement the administration made with the management, labor, and environmental groups to double car mileage, that was a good deal too. It will cut your gas prices in half, your gas bill. no matter what the price is, if you double the mileage of your car, your bill will be half what it would have been. It will make us more energy independent. It will cut greenhouse gas emissions. And according to several analyses over the next 20 years, it'll bring us another 500,000 good new jobs into the American economy.
Clinton also praised Obama's record on clean energy.
The president's energy strategy, which he calls all of the above, is helping too. The boom in oil and gas production, combined with greater energy efficiency, has driven oil imports to a near 20-year low and natural gas production to an all-time high. And renewable energy production has doubled.
It remains to be seen if Barack Obama himself can make as compelling a case for his own green policies. We'll cover that, no doubt, in our next Green News Report. Until then, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Remember, you can download our reports anytime from iTunes, listen to them on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio, follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report, and find us and like us on the Facebook. Bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Los Angeles is getting green, and Chicago is getting an infrastructure bank because Republicans and Democrats are working together to get it. They didn't check their brains at the door. They didn't stop disagreeing. But their purpose was to get something done.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Fourteen minutes past the hour, and hour number two is underway. I heard that last. I heard that clip that Brad and Desi played there when President Clinton said it last night. And I hate to be such a damn crank, but I reckon I am, because I just thought, Bill, we ain't getting no relief here in Appalachia. We're still the same old sacrifice zone we've been for 120 years. Only now we know we're dying. Now we know they're killing us. Now we know that 4,000 people a year, excess deaths, happen in mountaintop removal communities. And we need somebody to get serious about ending it. Somebody besides the people on the ground being killed. Some have gotten serious. You can find the list of co-sponsors of the AIC Act over at AICACT.org. Dennis Kucinich is serious about ending it. John Conyers is serious about ending it. Raul Grijalva is serious about ending it. Louise Slaughter, bless her heart. Hillbilly born and bred and representing Rochester, New York now. She's serious about ending it. John Yarmuth of Kentucky is serious about ending it. Brian Moran of Virginia is serious about ending it. Barbara Lee is serious about ending it. Judy Chu is serious about ending it. We need more folks to get serious about ending it, and that effort will be begun afresh next week in D.C. My buddy Bo Webb is taking the fight back to D.C., and he will be wearing himself out in D.C., and I'll join him there for a couple of days and maybe the following week. I don't know how it's going to shake out. We shall see. We shall certainly see. Let's go to the phones. That's what this is all about, after all. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's John in North Carolina. How are you?
John, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. That was an excellent, excellent song choice. I just gotta say, I mean, I'll never object to John Prine, but that's one of my favorites.
I love that. I love that one. It just right at the last moment. I just realized, you know, that kind of, yeah, it fit. It worked. And John Prine has a way of doing that.
Yeah, it fit. It was perfect. It was touching. It was moving. It was just a great choice. Wanted to mention, and I really liked right at the end, you know, you talked about all these things that unite us, you know, from our, you know, the chemical makeup of our bodies and our sort of shared humanity. And I just wanted to add in, it's kind of striking, you know, we talk about the horns family, but there's a lot of truth to that. And we know that, genetically, you know, we know that there's a lot of, you know, we have this shared humanity. We see all this diversity and we welcome it, and it's a good thing in the human species. But we make such a big difference out of difference, you know, but the reality is that we are all really a very, very close family, and we always have been. You know, we have 3 billion chemical pairings in our genome, and every person who has ever lived on Earth is different from every other person in less than 1% of those pairings, you know, and it's even closer than that, because most of those amino acid bonds that we talk about in the genome apparently don't really do anything, you know, they're just kind of noise left over from our evolutionary past. And so we're,
you know, there was an article about that very thing in the New York Times today.
No, I didn't see that.
Apparently it, and you know, not to gainsay you, John, but that was the common thinking. An extension project, oddly enough, funded by the United States federal government, who, you know, never creates jobs, went further into those pairings that don't seem to do anything, and it turns out they do.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I need to look at that. That's cutting edge, then. That's brand new.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal. Well, you know what a nerd I am. It was the first thing I read this morning when I got my New York Times headline email. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, how those things behave can speak to, for instance, disease processes.
Yeah.
And it was really, really exciting. Yeah, bits of mystery DNA far from junk play crucial role, and this is just their opening blurb, at least 4 million gene switches that reside in sections of the human genome once thought to be inactive turn out to have a critical function in the body, researchers have reported.
Okay, that's always kind of been the suspicion, that maybe when you start to look at the operation of especially disease sequences on multiple sites, multiple parts of the genome affecting it. That's always kind of been the suspicion, that maybe those silent things have a role in that. So I'll have to check it out. That would be very interesting.
Yeah, it's from today. Yeah. The author is Gina Colata of the New York Times. The federal project involved 440 scientists from 32 laboratories around the world, and they're looking for it to have big, big meaning. The guy who was involved with the Human Genome Project, which, of course, was the first to map it. He said it's Google Maps for the human experience. It was the Human Genome Project was like getting a picture of Earth from space. It doesn't tell you where the roads are. It doesn't tell you what traffic is like at what time of the day. It doesn't tell you where the good restaurants are, or the hospitals, or the cities, or the river, or the rivers. But he said, my head explodes at the amount of data coming out of this study. So yeah,
we have, but
to get back to your larger point, John, we have a common bond of humanity. We have a common humanity, and you know this better than I do. I think they've established that at one point in time, what would go on to become the human race was down to what, 2,000 members in an isolated corner of Africa.
Yeah, the thinking is there was a very serious genetic bottleneck, and we get this idea of mitochondrial Eve, and maybe, you know, there is something, this notion that there is somewhere back there, one woman and one man who created the lineage that, that became everybody. And it's not unreasonable to think that at all. And yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. And it's even more than that, of course. You can go back and you can think on a different scale. And, you know, we're 98% similar to chimpanzees, and we're 50% similar to daffodils, and we're 2% similar to E. coli bacteria. You know, it's the lesson out of evolution is just, it's mind-boggling when you think about it. It really demonstrates, you know, the
I find it so much more interesting. Yeah, I find it so much more inspiring, John. So much more exciting, so much more, dare I say it, mysterious than simply saying that one day God got bored and told the mud to get up, as Kurt Vonnegut noted, or, you know, the more elegant Elizabethan or pre-Elizabethan English William Tyndall in, you know, 16th century England. Of this being ordering the universe, because, you know, I can't. We are far from perfect in our genetic makeup, as the article we were discussing notes. You know, we are heir to things like diabetes and some genetic forms of cancer and various and sundry other diseases that are buried all the way down into the coding of our nature.
Sure.
And to try to understand that is a huge undertaking. And it also sort of denies the idea, because an infallible God, really would give us the tsetse fly.
Well, or the ticking time bomb that is cancer that was never selected against in our evolutionary past because people didn't live long enough for it to develop, you know, and so there was no reason to select against it. And you know, if you think that way and.
Or,
by environmental factors, yeah, right.
Right, the environmental factors, I think, are so huge because you've got perfectly innocent gene codings down there that will just toddle along its merry way until it comes in contact with, say, oh, I don't know, a polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbon, which makes it go butt wild crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, oh, hello, you've got cancer. Congratulations.
There you go. Switch goes on. Yeah, exactly. But you're right. It is, and that's what I took from it in times like these. And I really do feel this loss because, you know, the more has been a constant in my experience with the horn. And it's comforting in a way to think about the connections we all have together. Because, yeah, we've never met, but, you know, hell, we're kin. You know, and we on a very real level, just depending on the different scale, you know, and it's striking how much, well, like I said, how much difference we make of difference, and how we put such social importance on these things. I mean, you look at the Republican convention and how monochromatic it was. You know, and I'm a white guy. I mean, whatever, but you know, on a very basic level, the Democratic convention, what I've seen of it in the crowd shots. It looks like America, you know. Well, it looks like the human race, and that's just very inspiring to me.
It is inspiring, and that's the same thing that struck me. It looks not just like America, John, but like the world.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I read a news story today that I guess the Armenians and the Azerbaijanis over in the Caucasus region, and of course the Caucasus, that's where we get the word Caucasian.
Caucasian, right.
Yeah. They're getting ready to open up a great big whopping big can of bloodshed because they don't like each other for the last several thousand years or whatever.
Yeah.
All over a guy who, an Azerbaijani killed an Armenian at a language school in Hungary that was sponsored either by the U.S. or by NATO. Hungary charged the guy and put him in prison for life, and then they paroled him under the understanding he would serve at least 25 years in Azerbaijani prison. They got him home to Azerbaijan, and the Azerbaijani dictator then declared him pardoned and gave him some sort of $25,000 a year job or some such. And the Armenians are screaming mad, and the Azerbaijanis are saying, yeah, come on! And so, you know, and if that blows up, I mean, I know my geography over there is not real good, John.
Mine either.
But if that blows up, did you realize how many countries come into play? Let's see, there's Iran, there's Russia, there's Turkey, and, you know, Turkey's one of our NATO allies, and that means there's us.
Oh, well, and there's oil there, too. Don't forget there's oil there.
Right, there's an Azerbaijani natural gas pipeline that sort of curves around the disputed, and of course there's always a disputed province, this one being Nagorno-Karabakh. Sounds like a lovely place for a war, doesn't it, John?
Oh yeah, they're famous for their strife over in Nagorno-Karabakh. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so on the one hand we've got this common bond of shared humanity, and on the other hand we've got people who really really love money, and will deny that common bond in its name. Whoa. I mean, maybe there was something to that, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, right?
Well, it's good advice, and it's a recognition that you know, we see difference and we invest it with a whole lot of meaning, but it's almost like someone somewhere or some interest has tried to counter this notion of shared humanity, and I'll mention something you emailed to me that posting on lettersofnotes.com or that blog, you know, that it's a 16th century Korean letter that was found in the tomb of a man who was buried after he died, and it's from his wife, and it's the most touching and amazing thing I have read in a really long time. She talks about the loss she feels and how her son won't have a father and how she will miss this man forever, and it could have been written by someone living today. It spoke to that level of humanity, and it's striking that from 400 years ago in a vastly different culture in a vastly different location in the world, what the wife was writing to her deceased husband struck me on a very personal level. It's what I would say to my wife if we were separated, you know. And this is the kind of thing we see over and over again, that we all grapple with the same problems as humans. We all share this sense of finite life and questioning what's going to happen, and we're all united by this sense, and it's very striking, and it's hopeful in the sense that we can move past this, because we all are kin in a way.
We are, and that pair of sandals that she wove from hemp fibers and her own hair and placed in his tomb, well, and of course, I gotta give credit where credit is due. Agnes sent me that story,
and oh, yeah. Well, that's
and came in just you know, with tears running down her face, and said, "You got to read this," and I did, and I sent it on to you because those are the kinds of things that I know strike you, and it's that idea of a shared humanity, of a common bond. And I guess the larger question is, and you know, this is separate from the kind of inane questions that are asked by, like, that book, Better Off Without Him, about which I'm still angry, because lo and behold, yesterday, of all the people in the world you might not expect to hear reference it, I heard sports columnist and sports commentator Frank DeFord reference that book in a piece on NPR.
Really?
Yeah, and I thought,
surprising.
Damn. Well, he was using it as a means of explaining why football matters in the South.
Oh, come on. Come on. Go to a freaking Giants game. Come on. I'm sorry.
No. See, no, you're lucky. You're not behind the wheel right now, John.
Right.
I was. And I'm like, please. But you know, moments like this, and what I was saying is I don't want to go where he goes. Why can, you know, that monochromatic, shallow end of the gene pool culture fest we saw in Tampa, why can't they get that we're kin? Why can't they understand that? Why do they, is it because, and I don't want to sound elitist in asking this question, John, but why?
Well, don't you think it's two things? First of all, that implies that we need to look out for each other because we're more as similar than as different. And then the other thing is that sort of nasty fact FACT that we are all African. Do you think there's anything to that?
Well, no. I think that's you're going where I was going. That's right at the core of it. There's an element of white folks that don't want to think about the possibility that Africa is the original motherland. And I think back to about a year ago this time, when I was on a little boat heading off of the Georgia mainland over to an island where the remnant culture of freed African slaves still hangs on to its matrimony culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the lady I was with said, "You go straight east, and you get to the motherland, Africa." And of course, she was this wonderful. She's a friend of mine, a woman of color. And I looked at her and I said, "The mother of us all." And I know, I get a tingle out of that. I get a thrill out of it. I get anthropological thrill. Is that what it is, John? But I get a thrill out of thinking about that lonely band of 2,200 or however many it was that has been so evolutionarily successful as to cover the globe.
Right, and that's not to say that people whose heritages in Africa more recently, people with darker skin, haven't faced a very different set of
absolutely
than white folks have. And then, I want to be very clear about that. But in the back of the mind is like, if this is true, and it is, just for the record, that this is potentially a problem for us. And that's really what I
well, and it's a problem when white every time I hear a white person saying, "Well, we can't be, evolution's only a theory." Yeah, because they're waiting for another theory that says they're not related to every other human on the planet, including the persons of color. That's what they're telling us. They're waiting for a better theory. On the other hand, you have opened a different can, John, and that comes to our buddy, comes from our buddy Jay, who says, "Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that I have commonality with Newt Gingrich and Pat Robertson? Oh my God, tell me it's not so."
It is a problem, isn't it? I almost said something about that, But we gotta face that too. We gotta face the bad with the good, I guess.
Well, we've all got relatives we'd rather not see at Thanksgiving, and on the way to Grandma's house, we have conversations about how we're going to deal with them, don't we?
Yeah.
And we just hope we're at a different table.
Well, we do, and then I'm gonna get out of your way. That was kind of my only point, and it comes from sort of a melancholy place, I guess, but I think that there's something uplifting about it at the same time. So
there absolutely is. John, thank you very much, and have a good evening, and thanks for helping out this evening.
Yeah, you too. Love to the family.
All right.
Bye.
Bye now. That's Dr. John down in North Carolina now. He will be Dr. John in North Carolina henceforward. It's kind of cool. Yes, thank you, Marty. The matriarchy, I believe, is the term you're seeking. That could very well be. It's about 25 minutes before the hour, and it is conversation radio. We do exist by, this is about conversation. It's what makes this unique. It's what makes this charming. It's what makes this valid and validating. So the lines are open, 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333. I got this via email just a few minutes ago. Might as well tell you, you're seeing a lot of coverage on TV of all the lovely stuff going on in Charlotte, but there is a definitely less lovely side. Pop culture correspondent David from Maine sent this along, being reported by WBTV.com. Hanging Obama truck makes way into Charlotte. A truck with a disturbing display has made its way into Charlotte for the Democratic National Convention. The truck is hauling a trailer with 8 mannequins hanging from nooses from a rafter. They include President Barack Obama, North Carolina Governor Bev Perdue, and Senior Resident Superior Court Judge W. Douglas Parsons. Truck is owned by a man who calls himself Patriot Phipps. "You say it's racism. I say it's not. Absolutely not," he insisted in a YouTube video from May 2012. that explains the display. He says he added the president to the display after a federal case into the murder investigation that he's trying to highlight went nowhere. He's seeking justice for someone who was murdered. William Henry Phipps was shot and killed while riding down the highway with his father. Now, that's a state crime, murder. But somehow, of course, in the deranged and demented world of these folks, it's that one's fault. Right? Just like the truck you can see on any given day on Constitution or Independence Avenue or generally toddling around Capitol Hill, all garishly painted up, and you know, Obama is a murderer. Interestingly, he didn't have a George W. Bush is a murderer truck when over a million innocent Iraqis were dying because Saddam tried to kill my daddy. Right? Yeah, no. Marty noting, tell Patriot Phipps to go near some Repiglicans with a Willard mannequin hanging in effigy and see how far he gets. Irish Dave, working it hard this evening. So Pig Newton and survival of the fattest is an evolutionary dead end? There you go. Ron and Raleigh, I've had a fantasy, he says. I've had a long-time fantasy. What if, by some fluke, that when you looked at someone related to you, an aura would appear? Do you think white people seeing that glow around a black person would freak? Yeah, how would that... that's a satanic aura is what that is. I think that's a really neat concept. To extend it, what if you were lining up troops for battle and every soldier saw an aura around every other soldier? Kind of hard to have a war, wouldn't it? Well, it may be kinfolk, but they're the wrong kinfolk, so you just go ahead and slaughter them. What do you say? The science fiction fans in the crowd will be interested to know that I am presently reading an old but famous science fiction novel by Joe Haldeman. It's called The Forever War. He wrote it. He wrote the beginnings of it as a graduate student at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. And it later turned into this novel, which is apparently being adapted as a film. He had gone to the Iowa Writers' Workshop after serving tours in, or at least a tour in Vietnam. But he extends out into a future. He set this thing in like 1997, a little too close. But then again, it's 1973, and he had no way of knowing that Nixon having killed the moon, the moon program would have such drastic results. Dr. John noting by email, Ron, he says, pity Vonnegut's dead. That would make for an epic book, the aura idea. It would. It really would. Get busy, Ron, would you? I bet you got it in you. You know, it's in the realm of speculative fiction that we get a lot of the ideas for what our future will look like, and even the names of things. Everybody knows, like in the pharmaceutical industry or high-tech industries, those little hands that one manipulates at a distance inside, for instance, a clean or sterile room, those things are called Waldos. Those things are called Waldos because of a character named Waldo in a science fiction novel. But what I was going to mention is there are elements, because there's interstellar travel and so forth, because of this, there are time distortions in the novel. And by the time they make their first return to Earth from the war, all money has been replaced by a single unit of currency called the calorie, because of the ongoing struggle simply to eat. Interesting, no? Now, we, by the way, you know, among other things that happened last night was the obvious big hit of a speech by Sandra Fluke, F-L-U-K-E. That is apparently the correct pronunciation. And it drove right-wingers just plumb crazy that she dared speak up about the rights of women to have some degree of control over the workings of their own body. God knows they have no control, nor do most of the men folk, over the workings of the economy or the degree to which our lives are reduced to some degree, some level of vassal servitude. But she was plumb uppity for talking about, you know, things like birth control and abortion. And it really, really bothered Eric Erickson from Red State, who, for reasons passing understanding, was hired by CNN as a commentator of the right-wing variety. He tweeted yesterday, or rather 2 days ago, he tweeted during the first night of the Democratic convention, first night of the vagina monologues in Charlotte going as expected. And he caught a world of crap. There are in excess of 60,000 petition signatures calling for CNN to fire him. He's a right-winger, though. It's okay if you're a Republican, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, and CNN will do nothing. Nothing. About it. Because later on, after the firestorm of criticism began, he tweeted, "My apologies to those offended by my tweet. Wasn't my intention." There we go again with another one of those classic right-wing non-apology apologies. "My apologies to those offended." Implicit in that is that there's no real apology generally called for based upon the fact that it was an incivil, misogynist, sick, twisted, bigoted piece of garbage. "My apologies to those offended by my tweet. Wasn't it my intention?" Oh, really? What was your intention, Eric Erickson? Well, to make fun of the women folk. Oh, by the way, Flush Flimball used the word feminazis almost contemporaneous with the same speaker lineup. And yet, unlike John Duncan, who was called down for saying for referring to Paul Ryan's utilization of the big lie, Rush Limbaugh, now the world just said, "Yeah, you know, that's him. That's the kind of humor he brings. That's why he's America's truth detector. Feminazis." Oh, and by the way, while we're talking about disgusting right-wingers being hired by the for-profit media, it has been announced that CBS News, you know, the home of Edward R. Murrow, of Walter Cronkite, CBS News has just finally cashed in its chips, said, screw it, there's nothing legitimate or decent or honest. The last of our integrity went when we took a dump on Dan Rather for telling the truth, you know, about Dim Sun being gone from being AWOL from the Texas Air National Guard. Yeah, they pretty much crossed a sort of integrity Rubicon with that. They've decided, hey, look, Fox is making money. Let's make money. So guess who they hired? Yeah. CBS's news division has hired Frank Luntz. Luntz, quote, will make a number of appearances across the network between now and Election Day. Luntz, of course, was the organizer of the infamous January 2009 meeting, where prominent Republicans came together and solemnly agreed that they would not allow anything to be done in this country, that they would burn this country to the ground, that they would leave the economy in a heap of smoking rubble to get that black man out of our White House. Luntz put that together. Paul Ryan was there. According to a book called Do Not Ask What Good We Do Inside the U.S. House of Representatives, author and New York Times Magazine contributor Robert Draper writes that the attendees came out almost giddily after 4 hours with Luntz. This is what they agreed on, according to Mr. Draper. The dinner lasted nearly 4 hours. They parted company almost giddily. The Republicans had agreed on a way forward. Go after Geithner, and indeed, John Kyle, the senator, did the next day. Would you answer my question rather than dancing around it, please? Okay, you're going to have a hard time getting me to say nice things about Tim Geithner. But anyway, they also agreed to show united and unyielding opposition to the president's economic policies. Draper notes, 8 days later, Minority Whip Cantor would hold the House Republicans to a unanimous no against Obama's economic stimulus plan. They agreed to begin attacking vulnerable Democrats on the airwaves. It was less than 2 months before the National and Congressional Campaign Committee's first attack ad aired. They would win the spear point of the House in 2010 and jab Obama relentlessly, notice the eliminationist rhetoric in 2011, win the White House and the Senate in 2012. Newt Gingrich proclaimed to the others as they said goodbye, you will remember this day. You'll remember this day as the day the seeds of 2012 were sown. Those are the words of Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, Ph.D., amateur paleontologist. Frank Luntz has, of course, been on Fox News for years. But now he's got him a big-time gig on CBS. Mind-boggling, right? Not in the least. Not even minutely surprising. They're this sick. Oh, they put little yellow ribbon, Chinese-made little yellow ribbon magnets on the backs of their cars. And they wear flag pins on their pajamas. Maybe Dave Vitter wears his somewhere else. But how can you say that someone loves America who is willing to destroy it for nothing more than political avarice that is driven in turn by bigotry, by racism, and by nothing but the filthiest, outright hatred. We criticized the Democrats for being all too willing to compromise, and that was in evidence last night in Charlotte in President Clinton's speech, that Barack Obama still wants to work with the Republicans. Apparently the Obama campaign is pushing this trope that somehow things will get better in the second term, because once he's been reelected, the Republicans will realize that they're stuck with him, and that then they'll finally come around. Susie Madrack noting this in a post over at Crooks and Liars. I think it included something like, "Oh my effing God, not again." I don't think that's a direct quote, but pretty darn close. You can tell that, generally speaking, Democrats do care about this country because they will compromise, rather than having a protracted and nasty media fight over a Supreme Court Chief Justice with dead blue eyes. They acceded to John Roberts. Rather than having a protracted court fight or Senate fight over a man who authored opinions that said it was okay to strip search a little girl, and who authored an opinion saying it was okay to shoot a fleeing black man who was 60 feet away, shoot him in the back of the head as he tried to climb a fence, rather than having a protracted fight over putting a monster like that on the Supreme Court of the United States, the Democrats compromised again and gave us Sammy Alito. We compromise and compromise and compromise because we badly actually want to see America do okay, do better. But the Republican Party has tried to destroy this country and have been caught red-handed doing it. Mitch McConnell, referred to in the speech last night, saying that job one is getting rid of Obama and making him a one-term president. Jim Demented in South Carolina saying he wanted health care to be President Obama's Waterloo. We've documented it all over the course of the years on this program. And the only chance we have is for there not to be a President Bishop Romney. You are choosing between two imperial administrators. One who thinks it's a better thing when the proles do okay, or can at least make it, and another who doesn't care whether you eat or die, as long as he and his get richer and richer. The choice is that stark. And how I wish I Want a Pony was on the ballot, but it ain't. Not at all. Mike writing in noting, "It wasn't just Roberts and Alito that got by a Democrat-controlled U.S. Senate. 21 years ago, I took an Apple II computer disk, which had the yard sign and volunteer list for the County Democratic Party, to the head of the party and said, 'I'm not doing this anymore. I can get Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court by voting Republican.' I handed that person the disk and at the next election changed my voter registration to Republican with the thought that by voting third party, I would only be costing the Democrats one vote, while if I voted Republican, I cost the Democrats two votes. I would also point out that not only have Roberts, Alito, Thomas, but also Kennedy got on the court with the Democrats having majority in the U.S. Senate. Back in 1991, when Clarence Thomas was named by G.H.W. Bush to replace Thurgood Marshall, the most liberal justice on the court, in my perspective, was Harry Blackmun. named by Richard Nixon as a conservative who in his early terms was described as a Minnesota twin because he voted so often with Warren Berger. What has the Supreme Court done for us since Clarence Thomas was allowed to join it rather than the charges of Anita Hill? One, Bush versus Gore, five of the top 10 justices to serve on the court since 1937, stopped an election to appoint George W. Bush president. Those five were Thomas, Rehnquist, Scalia, O'Connor, and Kennedy. And part two, Citizens United. That from Mike. With regard to Frank Luntz, Ron in Raleigh notes, this is the kind of crap that proves there's no God. Luntz will be the first against the wall when the revolution comes. I'll be on the other side. The universe speaks back to you, Bob. This from David in Maine. When you said the title Forever War, a chime went off and I realized it was from reading about this. From the Ridley Scott Wiki. On October 12, 2008, Ridley Scott confirmed that after a 25-year wait for the rights to become available, he is making a return to science fiction with a film adaptation of the book. In March 2009, Scott confirmed that the film would be in 3D, citing James Cameron's Avatar. I'm filming a book by Joe Haldeman called Forever War. I've got a good writer doing it. I've seen some of James Cameron's work, and I've got to go 3D. It's going to be phenomenal. Wow. I had no idea. Ron in Raleigh is also familiar with the Forever War. He said it's a great book. I read it over 25 years ago. I'm going to go find my copy and reread it. The book caused quite a stir because of its take on homosexuality. Yeah, being gay is okay. And like a third of the world is gay in whatever year it is. Because, among other things, it cuts down on a population explosion. Just got past that part. So, there's that and ever so much more. I mean, ever so much more in the coming hour, which should, theoretically, at least include your thoughts. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. If we didn't want your comments, this would be a podcast, you know, pre-recorded and just me blathering for 3 hours. It is the conversation, as I said, that makes this all so special. So chime in. And we'll be back with anything you have to say and a whole bunch of other stories if you don't. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice, progressive conversation radio, available on a wide variety of platforms, including TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and Tuner Internet Radio, as well as headonradionetwork.com itself. This is The Horn.
My pappy said, son, you gonna...
No, wrong. I hate it when... I hate it when... I hate it when the media player lies to me. So we'll just keep looking. Yeah, this will be much better. Take a break. Light up the lines.
hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeedy. Coming up on 6 minutes past the hour. About 50 minutes worth of conversation remaining in tonight's program if you want to get involved. Email coming in from our buddy Andy. A couple of questions, or a question and an observation. One, any progressives speaking at this convention other than Elizabeth Warren? He established the 50-state strategy, one big 2006, but Howard Dean, but he doesn't exist in today's Barack Obama Democratic Party. We have to cooperate. You know, we have to cooperate with the Republicans. This will not end up well for the working class. And I have that concern. And there's plenty of room for concern. And I hate dualities. But this is a country founded on a duality, or at least formulated on it. I don't know. Do you think that little Jimmy Madison understood that the framers of the Constitution deliberately chose the concept of duality? Maybe to protect the money? Because they understood that if there were more than a couple of parties, say, because, you know, they set up an election system that was winner-take-all, do you think they thought that a duality would protect the money better than, say, a true parliamentary system? Don't know. Sure seems like it sometimes, though, doesn't it? Protect the money above all. Even when Bill Clinton was speaking last night, he spoke his hope for our future by saying that everyone who has ever bet against the United States has lost money. Tells you a little something. Andy also noted Sammy the Fish Alito has not once come to the side of the court tacking to the center, the moderate side of the court. All other Supreme Court judges have switched sides at least once. If the Democratic senators would not use the filibuster against Sammy the Fish Alito and Justice John Roberts, they will never, ever use it, while the Republicans, with absolutely no pride, use the filibuster as a hackneyed tool of the political process. Going back to the Forever War, Marty says, I don't think Ridley's gotten that Forever War adaptation going just yet. Prometheus had nothing to do with Haldeman's masterwork. Marty says, I agree. I need to find my copy and reread it. This is out there, and I actually tweeted about it earlier today. The world's richest woman, for some reason or another, we've found ourselves talking about her of late. She is a festering boil on Australia's butt, not ours. Sorry, guys. In the midst of all of the voter suppression going on here, had a note from our buddy Robert in Australia, phase five when he's in the chat room. This came in Tuesday night. Robert said, council elections here in Australia on Saturday. He's in New South Wales, Robert is. He says, I'll walk in, have my name ticked off after stating my name and address. I'll fill out the paper ballots, and I'll walk out. It's all done in about 10 minutes. The results are in within 24 to 48 hours. This, I think, after the story about the 105-year-old woman who had to wait 90 minutes and was very nearly denied her right to vote in the state of Pennsylvania because the computer database didn't include
the possibility of someone living to be 105. Name? State your name. State your address. Fill out the paper. Well, you know, in Australia, they're probably full of voter fraud. No, they're not. No, they're not. It has taken place. Vote fraud. I know because I'm here in West Virginia. It has been said that if Logan County was depopulated down to two people, those two people would sell each other their votes. It's more of a problem of vote buying. You know, a couple of cases of pints of Four Roses in the trunk of the car and go vote the slate. It's happened. But that's not what folks, that's not what Republicans are concerned about. They'd happily do that. The whole picture ID BS is a function of a desire to keep, you know, those people from voting. So it is nice to get a little picture from Robert of what the plebiscite on Saturday, where he lives, will be like. We're coming toward the end of the Australian winter. Spring will soon begin there. And Robert will take a simple walk down to the polling place. Your name? Very good. Here's your ballot. Done already? Thanks. See you next election. Goodbye now. But, you know, ask a right-wing republic, and they'll tell you that Australians are not free. Neither are Germans, or Italians, or Spaniards, or Brazilians. Nope, not free. Japanese aren't free either. Nope, sorry. Only America is free. You know, where we're free to die from preventable disease. Where 4,000 hillbillies living in mountaintop removal communities are free to be an excess death every year. But all this took, I was beginning this with a reference to a woman that I described as a festering boil on the butt of Australia, Darlene writing in, LOL, she looks like a festering boil too, Bob. I'm so glad you guys will go there for me. Her name is Gina Reinhart. She's 58 years old. She was born rich. She was, in fact, I know, baseball analogies with regard to Australians are problematic, but she was born on third thinking she hit a triple. Apparently she belongs to something called the Sydney Mining Club. I thought they had like rugby clubs and soccer clubs and yeah, Australian rules football clubs. I didn't know there was a mining club. But there is. She's big in the iron ore gig. And she's damned well tired of those working people getting in the way of her turning $18 billion into $20 billion. Damn working people. For heaven's sakes. This from the BBC.
Good evening, IPA members and friends. I'm sorry I couldn't be with you this evening.
There's no richer woman on earth and few more controversial people in Australia. Gina Reinhart is said to be worth $30 billion. It all comes from Australia's mining boom, but that's now weakening as Chinese demand wavers. And Miss Reinhart has decided to use a rare public appearance to blame Australia's high costs for the slowdown.
We must get realistic, not just promote class warfare. Indeed, if we competed...
Huh? Did one of them finally get all honest and stuff?
We must get realistic and not just promote class warfare? Did one of the people waging the class warfare just admit that they're waging it? But that's not the good part.
At the Olympic Games, as sluggishly as we compete economically, there would be an outcry.
Last week, June Reinhart wrote an article saying Australians would be richer if they smoked and drank less. And now says the country should look to Africa to make itself more competitive.
Africans want to work, and its workers are willing to work for less than $2 per day. Such statistics make me worry for this country's future.
No, I most certainly don't.
But the idea that Australians should be paid on a par with Africans was brushed aside by the Labor Prime Minister.
It's not the Australian way to toss people $2, to toss them a $2 gold coin and then ask them to work for a day. We support proper Australian wages and decent working conditions for Australian people.
Now, I'm not completely conversant with Australian slang. I stand willing to be corrected if need be. But did the Prime Minister of Australia just say that Gina Reinhart is a tosser? Because it kind of sounds like she sort of did, which would be cool.
It's probably fair to say that most Australians are either in awe or are appalled by Gina Reinhart. Over the past few months, she's been involved in a very public, very bitter dispute with her own children over control of the family fortune. And now she's turned her attention to the nation's wealth, which is what makes her so fascinating and so controversial.
Really? That's all you can say, buddy? BBC guy? She's fascinating and controversial? How about obnoxious, hateful, loathsome, disgusting? Fascinating and controversial. Oh, dear God. Our dear friend Jude just wrote in, O'Reilly is interviewing Karl Rove. Burn sage now. You know, sage is a cleansing agent. Yeah. Marty noting, a nutter would be a better term than controversial, or she's a nutter. But you know what? I've said it before that every rotten thing the right wing and the predatory business people come up with in the United States will eventually find its way around the globe. People are reacting to this Gina Reinhart story, suggesting that Australian miners should be paid $2 a day and be damned happy to have it. Right? Well, it's not new. It's just not new. But it's perhaps, I don't know, surprising to people who are decent human beings. But it's been going on here for a while. What do I mean? Well, this idea of paying miners who put their lives at risk a pittance while they slowly die. It's old hat here in almost level West by God, Virginia. No, really. It is. It's considered to be, I don't know, inspiring economic thought. Like I said, I saw this thing about Gina Reinhart earlier today. and I was immediately reminded of something from right here in my own backyard. Australia, thank you for introducing us to Gina Reinhart. I always like to return favor for favor. So, Australia, let me introduce you to friend of Cole, Don Nealon. Now, Don Nealon used to be the coach of the West Virginia University Mountaineers. He was an okay coach, but he's an even worse spokesman for destroying West Virginia. Right after he quit being coach of the Mountaineers, he got himself a job as a friend of Cole. You know, his job was to go out and talk happy stuff about Cole. It was 2002. And Don Nealon, newly minted friend of Cole, had been told that coal workers and are making way too much money. The news story came from the Charleston Gazette of Monday, the 20th of January, 2003. Remember, we hadn't even started bombing the snot out of the people of Iraq yet. Long time ago. Nealon is to be chief spokesman for a massive public relations campaign paid for by Friends of Coal. At his inaugural effort, a speech before the West Virginia Coal Association's annual symposium, the former Mountaineers, my God, if they knew what symposium meant, they'd never have another one. The former Mountaineers coach sounded like a caricature of himself. "The best defense is a good offense," he said of the PR effort. "You guys are 10 or 11 and 0, and everyone talks like you're 5 and 6. When you're winning, we've got to let people know." Okay, well, all right. But then he got to the heart of the matter. And he said, because see, this is how long they've been hooting about the regulations and the EPA. Back before they could blame Obama for it, they were just blaming it generally because the Bush administration wasn't letting them blow up enough mountains. No, they want it gone entirely. The EPA under George W. Bush was a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal industry. But they were still disgusted with it. And so, trying to earn his paycheck, Dandy Don Nealon, of the 3rd and 45 draw play fame. We used to stand in the stands, and when it was 3rd and 20 or 3rd and 45, the entire student section would yell, "Draw!" And the opposition team would turn around and go, "They must know something." And then Don Nealon would call the draw. And it would be 3rd and 75. But Don Nealon said, "Let's get some of these doggone regulations eliminated, or at least made sound, so guys can mine coal. I don't exactly know the regulations, but I'm smart enough to know that in China they mine for $6 a ton, and we have got to be able to compete with them." He said that at a time when some 10,000 Chinese miners were dying per year. So don't feel all alone or anything, Australia. You didn't build that. The greed and mercenary profiteering of American anarcho-capitalism gave Gina Reinhart that idea. $2 a day to mine in Australia. By the way, I'm also being informed by email by Irish Dave that Gina's money comes from coal, too. Why am I not surprised? Ron and Raleigh noting, the list of loathsome people, the 30 most loathsome people, was obviously written before Ms. Reinhart reared her oversized head. She certainly deserves a spot. Oh, I think she'll make the next list, don't you?
they're not going to be happy until we are all wearing those chains that Joe Biden referenced. It's not just a thing they like. They don't like the merry jingle of chains. I mean, they like it. But to them, it sounds like profit. Darlene asking the question, notice how the fascinating festering boil only mentioned that Aussies should stop drinking, smoking, and socializing so much, but didn't mention eating? Why, I wonder? Could it be that eating is something she clearly does a whole hell of a lot of? It seems she finds plenty of time in her busier-than-everybody-else-in-the-world work schedule to chow down. Signed, happy to briefly assume the caddy mantle for a few minutes. Darlene. Lord, there was... What is seen cannot be unseen. You didn't see what I saw playing that audio. There was footage of this woman standing in a receiving line for the coin. And Her Holiness the Queen, dressed in a lovely lilac frock, walked past, and she was dressed... Yeah, Jim said the other night, you know, somebody was living proof that you should not wear white before Labor Day. The woman was all in white with a black hat. Fitting. And I don't know how somebody... Archibos! Sorry. But, you know, when somebody's complaining about somebody else being able to eat, and as Darlene... Yeah, you get the idea. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Am I to lose my crown as the queen of cattiness?
No, no, she was only borrowing it from you, Jim.
Oh, I see. Well, she certainly did make it quite a pass.
Do you see what an influence you have? You see what... You see? We had a nice little conversation going, and then you got all catty. But, yeah, no, she should not wear white before Labor Day. You're
hey,
absolutely
you
right.
You went first. I didn't, but...
Well.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you, it's certainly something. And first, my condolences go out to the loss of your friend Maura, as I said.
Your friend, too. You may not have known it, but she was.
Yeah, well, she transit Gloria Mundi, and may her... passage into a better realm be a swift and pleasant one. That's all I can say about that. That's the way it is, you know. We only have a certain number of days allotted upon this earth, and then we are, I guess, in another dimension. That's hopeful. But I want to ask you something, transitioning from that.
Yes.
What is this business about Romney's tax returns being held for ransom? Have you heard about that?
No, what?
Yeah, some group has come out and they want $1 million in Bitcoin each, or else they're going to release Romney's tax returns.
Oh, it sounds like Anonymous has been very naughty.
Well, they sent copies of it to, I think, the head of the... Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and it was referenced to the Republican Party. This is what they are saying. And the first line on the address block was to the leaders of the Republican Party, and leaders was misspelled. I mean, how the hell can you misspell?
Well, that would, I mean, that sounds kind of criminal.
Well, yeah, it does, but I mean that was on the news this morning, and yeah,
who's, not that I'm challenging Jim, but whose news?
This morning it was on MSNBC, I believe.
Huh. I don't know how I missed that.
Yeah, there. So, and they have given Romney until the 28th of this month, roughly 3 weeks or there, but to either. Pay them $1 million in Bitcoinage, or they're going to go public with it and apparently cause Mr. Romney some embarrassment.
Jim, you have used a term with which I am unfamiliar. Please explain Bitcoinage.
I don't know, because I question that myself. What is Bitcoinage? I mean, unmarked bills? I don't know. You know, when you generally ask for ransom, you normally want to have unmarked bills. And Bitcoinage is a term with which I am not familiar.
Well, we shall have to sort that out right now, I fear.
Okay. I mean, if anybody's out there who can tell me, I would like to know.
Well, luckily, we have the interweb tubes here, perhaps. Okay.
I plan to look it up, but I had other things going on. But nonetheless.
Wikipedia stating that the word bit is a colloquial expression referring to specific coins and various coinages throughout the world. A bit is an equal to an eighth of a dollar.
Well, that's what they want in Bitcoin.
In the UK, the threepenny bit. Threepenny? Threepenny bit? So, this is kind of, you'd think this would be getting a little bit more play.
It is a term with which I am totally unfamiliar. And
well, they got one past the both of us, Jim. They're playing for keeps.
I guess they are. You know, last time I thought about you because during the opening part of the convention, just almost at sundown, there was a huge lightning strike. I sent you an email about it.
Yeah, I saw that.
This thing hit, and I'm not kidding. There was a fireball that at least was 30 or 40 feet high. And it shook my house. Rattled the windows.
That sounds like something hit a substation. Did power go down?
No. This is in the middle of the field.
Wow.
And so, and you know, immediately I had my pistol in my hand and was on the floor. Because I, you know, am not unfamiliar with mortar shells and things like that, but this thing went up like you would not believe. And, of course, the power went on and off, and everything had to be reset on the TV and on the DVR and everything like that. And I said, my God, am I under attack?
That's bizarre. I mean, I saw a lot of distant, really creepy lightning last night, but...
Buddy, you didn't want to see this. I thought about you because of explosions like this are what you have to live with or your friend Bo Webb has to live with when they set off dynamite charges. I mean, my God, this is like being in a war zone. I thought about that. And, here, you know, under two cats, and the first thing I did was reach for a flare pistol.
Wow.
You know, it's amazing what damn these things can do.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. I'm reading what I can find about this story. I don't know if this is a hoax or Atlantic Wire is reporting it. They sent a hard drive and a letter to the local Republican Party headquarters and Nashville City Papers. Ken Whitehouse has seen them. This was all done in Nashville at the Nashville office of Price Waterhouse, apparently.
Exactly, and it was in a big manila envelope, and they said that they were not paid in 3 weeks, and they are going to have to release his tax returns. And I don't know. I don't know who sent it. Or
Price Waterhouse is having a low-rent freakout. We are aware of the allegations that have been made regarding improper access to our systems. We're working closely with the United States Secret Service, and at this time there's no evidence that our systems have been compromised or that there was any unauthorized access to the data in question.
Well, as far as their systems being compromised, let me tell you something. Systems more sophisticated than Price Waterhouse have been compromised and, you know, hacked into, so who knows? But I just thought I would bring that to your attention. I thought you might have heard about it, but nonetheless, there it is, and there you have it.
There are weird messages accompanying it. One, all these considerations did not deter me from the path of duty. And then another package says, the moment I understood the will of my heavenly Father. This is bizarre.
Well, I think things just become more and more bizarre with each passing day.
Well, yes, they do. They went into great detail to describe how they did it. Just so folks will know what we're talking about, Jim, they said Romney's 1040 tax returns were taken from the PwC office 8/25/2012 by gaining access to the third floor via a gentleman working on the third floor of the building. Once on the third floor, the team moved down the stairs to the second floor and set up shop in an empty office room. During the night, Suite 260 was entered and all available 1040 tax forms for Romney were copied. A package was sent to the PwC on Suite 260 with a flash drive containing a copy of the 1040 files, plus copies were sent to the Democratic office in the county and copies were sent to the GOP office in the county at the beginning of the week, also containing flash drives with copies of Romney's tax returns before 2010. A scanned signature image for Mitt Romney from the 1040 forms were scanned and included with the packages taken from earlier 1040 tax forms, gathered and stored on the flash drives. I don't know what to make of it, Jim.
I don't either. I thought to myself, well, this is a bit of a sticky wicket, isn't it?
There would be a real freak out going. Let's see, Bitcoinage. This from Ron in Raleigh. Bitcoinage is a monetary unit used online, which is not a fiat monetary unit. It's a sort of like PayPal without bank involvement. Ron says, I'll bet the threat caused Bishop Willard to soil his magic undergarments. So Bitcoinage is something that, well, I mean, it has nothing, for instance, to do with the, Ed also noting, a distributed electronic cash protocol. It uses cryptographic technologies and a network of computing power to enable users to make and verify irreversible instant online Bitcoin payments without an obligation to trust and use centralized banking institutions and authorities. Wow. That phrase, esoteric, is as esoteric as it sounds. When I heard Bitcoin, I thought maybe we were dealing with some weirdo Ayn Rand, Ron Paul types who wanted to be paid in gold or something.
No, they don't want pieces of eight. I mean, apparently it's some type of electronic transfer of which they cannot trace or whatever. I don't know. Yeah, you know, I'm definitely out of my depth here, but I thought I would bring this to your attention and see what your reaction would be. And well, there it is, and there you have it, my friend.
Weirdness indeed.
You were talking about a song earlier when you were referencing the passage of your friend, and I was thinking about that song from the 60s about We Are Stardust and Are Looking for the Guard. Do you remember who did that?
No, but I will find out real quick.
It was a real beautiful song. I remember it accompanied the
let's see.
Of the Summer of Love in
65. I guess it was sung at Crosby, Stills, and Nash, maybe?
Could be. I just couldn't pull it up from the file. And I just didn't remember it. I remember the song, but I couldn't remember who wrote it. But I mean, how it was ironic when you were talking about we are all elements from the stars and that song, and you know, it lent itself to what you were saying earlier, and other people who were contributing to this program tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
For some reason, I was thinking about Grace Slick or somebody like that.
Huh.
Or it could be Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. back in...
Maybe you're doing the transference between Stardust and Starship.
Could be. Yeah, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, that does sound a lot more familiar, and I can't remember the name of the album. I had it and played it a lot in those days. And, but I thought, Stardust. I mean, we...
And, of course, there's the Hoagy Carmichael version as well.
Of course, and that was done in memory of his wife when she had died and been cremated and had her ashes spread over the Isle of Manhattan.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Yeah, that's where that came from, Stardust. That was Hoagy Carmichael's wife. I think he did the Hong Kong Blues and did lots of other wonderful things back in those days when people were more civilized and polite to one another. It seems as though we've lost so many elements of civilization and politeness and decency and respect for one another. It really does. Back when things didn't used to be, because you had a difference of opinion with somebody, that difference of opinion had to be some type of vendetta or curse or blood sport. I still remember those days. And I just saw Caroline Kennedy Schlossberg make a brief comment on the platform of the convention in Charlotte, and it brought back a lot of memories of her, her father, her uncle.
Indeed.
And the vision that they had for a world, which has seemingly become lost among the fighting and the just absolute bitterness of some of these people who are now political pundits and are trying to gain access into the inner psyche of so many stupid people who will believe this stuff. I mean, you mentioned the bird, they're like Rush Limbaugh. Well, you know, Rush Limbaugh, that's entertainment. What is it? That's entertainment part four?
Shit. Well, but that's the frustrating thing.
And O'Reilly.
Is that the cop out for Rush is, well, you know, that's just his shtick. The man has been calling women feminazis for years. And we wonder why he's on, what is this, his third, his fourth marriage?
Well, I mean, what do they call Adolf Hitler's speeches? His shtick?
Yeah, he was just working the crowd, Jim.
Yeah, you see what his shtick got a lot of people in, dude.
Yeah.
50 million dead, not to include or exclude 6 million people who were gassed.
And apparently the song was written by Joni Mitchell, We Are Stardust.
Yeah, that's right. That's it. Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, thanks, Ed.
And I think she did something else, or was it somebody else called Court and Spark?
No, that was an album of hers, yeah.
It was a good album.
Indeed it was.
It's a beautiful album. I remember it. And, you know, it... you know, when you sit back thinking of lives that are meeting and you're... all things of times pass, and you think of songs and this, that, and the other, and you wonder how back in those days when we were a lot younger, how things would get to the point where they are now. You'd never think it. I never thought about it.
Never saw it coming, right, Jim?
Yeah, it's about surprising, Bob. Never saw it coming. Never thought it would get this bad, but apparently it's just gotten real, real bad, and, I don't know what's going to happen in this election. I think the Democrats have done a very good job in trying to promote their positions. They did have, I think, a problem with a plank that they changed that Jerusalem would be capital, which is fine. And they can, if that can, you know, Paris is worth the math, I've always said, in this program. And if that can at least get leverage in Florida, so be it. It doesn't make any difference. I mean, you know, but I ask, you know, are we going to move our embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem? I don't know.
See, I wouldn't want to do that.
But if they do, I mean, as long, you know...
Because I wouldn't want to see our embassy blow up.
Well, hell, Bob, they can blow embassies up anywhere they are. You know, if they are such determination, you know that, and I know that. Just like President Kennedy once said, if anybody wants to kill me, they can. And if they want to blow up an embassy, they can find some way to do it. I mean, these people are extremely good at that sort of thing. But all in all, the Democratic Convention has, for me, been innovating, and it's been interesting, and there's been a somewhat a renewal of faith, and I was particularly impressed by Bill Clinton. I mean, nobody can give a speech like Bill Clinton. My Lord in heaven, the speech was supposed to go, what, 25 minutes, and he went 45. And
you know what? You don't flash the red light at him.
No, you don't. And
because you get those beautiful moments of I mean, it was brilliant. It was it was political brilliance to say of Lion Paul Ryan, it takes a lot of brass to accuse somebody of doing something you've done.
Yeah, that's my point exactly in bringing that up. And I thought, you know, talk about the goddess of irony. There it is.
But you know what? There was also further proof that the for-profit media are still the for-profit media. A lot of fact-checkers went to work after that speech, and most of them said that what Clinton spoke was factual. Do you know how that? You know how this is just beautiful, Jim.
He passed the fact test. There's no question about it.
But do you know how the Associated Press dealt with it?
God only knows.
Yeah, you're gonna love this. The Associated Press dealt with the facts asserted by Bill Clinton as follows. This won't take long.
Oh, go ahead, please.
Clinton, who, this is an Associated Press report. Clinton, who famously finger-wagged a denial on national television about his sexual relationship with intern Monica Lewinsky and was subsequently impeached in the House on a perjury charge, has had his own uncomfortable moments over telling the truth. That's how they fact-checked him.
Well, I don't think... Well... They just can't give that up, can they?
Well, it's pitiful. It's truly pathetic.
I mean, when the sexual peccadilloes of Bill Clinton are still being dragged out of the mud the way they're trying to do, they really are going to have to dig down deep and deep and deep. I mean, Clinton should never have lied about that. He should have said, yeah, it was good, and I enjoyed it. And I'm sorry it happened, but it did happen. And that's what he should have done. That's what he should have said. Just like Richard Nixon should have told the truth about Watergate. But both men...
The two being wildly different from each other, of course.
...have come to... In spite of their mistakes in the past, I mean, Nixon was, in certain many respects, has been revered as an honored statesman who had a lot of good ideas. And whatever happened to forgive and forget?
That does not exist. I mean, the Republicans love to thump their Bible, but they seldom read them, Jim.
I mean, I can remember during those impeachment proceedings when you had people like Henry Hyde leading the House managers.
Right, who had destroyed a marriage.
Yeah.
And you had that dude, that weird dude from Georgia.
And you know, do you remember the footage of the procession of them as they marched into the house? And, you know, I thought to myself, what is this, some type of scene from a pharaoh's burial?
It reminded me of something you might have expected from Cromwell.
Yeah, exactly. And all these people were just as guilty as sin of all types of things worse than Bill Clinton. And the hypocrisy of...
Well, I mean, there was Lindsey Graham, one of those guys who's so far into the closet that he could be riding a lion through Narnia, complaining about someone hiding their sexual proclivities.
Oh, dear.
I
wonder when Lindsey is going to decide to come out of the closet. Maybe October the 11th in coming out days, maybe he might come out. I mean, if Anderson Cooper had the courage to do it, but of course Lindsey Graham never would. And
well, you know, I mean, he's a JAG colonel in the Air Force JAG Corps, and we've gotten rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but he still won't do it.
Well, he couldn't do that because that would ruin his image among his constituency in South Carolina, and that's just the way it is.
And he couldn't get elected dog catcher after that. You're absolutely right.
No, he couldn't. But here I refer back to Florence King and her books that I talked about a lot of times about the Southern way of dealing with the peculiar bachelor uncle who simply never found time to get married or that and the other. And I still encourage you to read Southern Ladies and Gentlemen and Confessions of the Pale Southern Woman. You will find them both an excellent read.
I really must.
And, of course, when I read these books over and over again, I think about Lindsey Graham, but except, the Southern uncle who lives by himself in his beautifully appointed house filled with antiques, he's hurting nobody.
No.
But Lindsey Graham has been extremely hurtful and in many ways malicious and very much angry with himself about his own sexuality.
Well, the closet does terrible things to people.
Yeah, like Roy Cohn. I mean, that's basically what Lindsey Graham is to me, is like a watered-down version, or maybe not so watered-down version, because Roy Cohn never held public office. But, I mean, he, God knows, was a mean son of a bitch. And Lindsey Graham, in some of the stuff that I've seen when he's on TV, evokes Roy Cohn.
In many ways, yeah.
It's a funny thing. I saw a documentary about Provincetown, and Norman Mailer lived there. And I think it was Norman Mailer. And Mailer had a place with a garage attached to it, and Roy Cohn worried about that garage and did. Now, I think it was Norman Mailer. Now, you can correct me if, or your audience can. But actually, he entered on Mailer's answering machine, "Hi, you have reached the residence of Norman Mailer. And this is Roy Cohn. And if you don't leave a message, then I'm going to come after you."
Wow.
And also, Mailer had some very good-looking young sons, and of course, he was kind of scared about Roy Cohn, particularly after he got sick, and even spread lime all over his lawn to prevent the virus from getting over to his house.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a... P-Town has its shared history in some of the people who have lived there. It's a wonderful place. It's a great place to be on the 4th of July. If you really want to see some interesting people, I suggest you go to P-Town, Massachusetts, but I've wandered too far.
Well, there's probably a couple of amens going on in the chat room.
Really? Well, Provincetown is... Provincetown is Provincetown. It's just an incredible place. Just on this little spit of land that was settled by the Portuguese and now it's become the Wild West of the East. And, of course, P-Town was the home of a number of writers and just an incredible place to do it in the summer. And, but I just wanted to ask about the, blackmail thing about
Well, that's fascinating. I'll be interested to see if that develops any further.
Well, I'm sure that
it, with the exception, I mean, Atlantic Wire is pretty reputable, but with the exception of that, I didn't see many people mentioning it in the respectable for-profit media. So there's probably a bit of gatekeeping going on.
Well, I don't know, but I'm sure if there's any veracity to it, that Mr. Romney had better have a drop seat in his magic underwear.
Maybe too late. So September, but I mean, September 28th is the drop day, right?
That's what they said, September 28th. That date comes to mind. Like I say, I had just awakened and it flipped on the TV. I was still supine and this came over the TV and I said, well, what's going on here? What the hell is Bitcoinage?
Well, I figured at some point in time, all of this would have to arouse the curiosity of the folks in the anonymous community. How could it not?
Well, of course. And if this man's tax returns are so...
Well, remember, Jim, John McCain saw 23 years worth of them. And immediately chose Sarah Palin.
Okay.
I mean, doesn't that tell you something?
I'm not sure what you're saying. I'm sorry.
John McCain saw 23 years of Willard Romney tax returns, and the next thing he did was choose Sarah Palin to be his vice presidential running mate instead of Willard Romney. That tells you that there is something gooey and stinky in those returns.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. There's something definitely rotten in the state of Denmark. And
all kinds of Republicans from all over have said, listen, he needs to close the controversy by just releasing the returns. Everybody has said that but John McCain.
Well, if he won't release the returns, there must be something in there he doesn't want people to know. I would like to know, really, how much that man really owes the federal government in terms of...
Well, he doesn't think he... It's not so much what he owes the government, Jim. It is the fact that he has used massive tax avoidance techniques like offshore accounts, Swiss bank accounts, Cayman Islands accounts, and so forth, to keep from paying taxes. And it will not play well with the American people if they should find out how many millions upon hundreds of millions of dollars that is.
Well, but, you know, what's the difference between tax evasion and tax avoidance?
One is theoretically legal, and the other one, one is illegal, and the other theoretically legal.
Tax avoidance?
Yes. Tax avoidance is theoretically legal, whereas tax evasion is a crime.
Well, you know, I can't see the difference between the two. I mean...
Well, that's because you don't have enough money for it to matter, Jim, and I'm not being offensive.
I know, but if you avoid and evade, I mean...
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, you have a legal background, I don't. But nonetheless, I would like to really know how much that man has cheated the federal taxpayer out of.
It would be nice to know. Jim, got a roll. Thank you. Have a wonderful evening.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye. And so we come to the end of this Thursday program, this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And our fondest memories go out for our dear departed friend, Maura. We will be thinking of you, Maura. Thank you for all you've done for the Horn and for what a friend you were and will live on as. In our memories. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. You, first and foremost, our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, John Fox, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn. Thank you.
with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the 10th day of September 2012. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid, and what we do here, we could like to call conversation radio. The Horn is available easily across a wide variety of platforms on the interweb tubes. Remember, it's not a big truck. You can get The Horn simply by going to headonradionetwork.com.